This is the Eurosnob Podcast.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back into the Eurosnob Podcast. My name is Ian Smith, and we are joined tonight by Alex, John, and Calvin Masterson. Alex, how's it going tonight, man?
Good, Ian. How are you doing, man?
Not too bad. I'm trying to stay positive in this disappointing Arsenal times, but you know, we do what we can. It's deja vu, as we've gotten into before.
Good luck with that. Yeah,
right. We're used to it, so we have some practice. And Calvin, welcome on. Well, welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, glad you could finally make it. Why don't you tell our audience just a little bit about yourself?
Yeah. So I've been supporting the team since, I guess really the first game I watched was the 06 Champions League final, which is kind of how I became started. I was supposed to be studying for a Latin exam at my dad's office and really didn't want to study for the test. And the game was on when I turned on ESPN in the break room. And I, for some reason, decided to follow the team that went down to 10 men. So pretty much have watched since 2006, 2007. From Nashville, live in Atlanta.
Sweet.
Yeah. So that's pretty much it.
Yeah, it's a decision that I find myself questioning more and more. I blame the YouTube videos and Thierry Henry and Dennis Bergkamp being as incredible as they were for the suffering that I've gone through ever since. So.
I think we're all in the same boat where we, you know, once the game kind of became more accessible to us in the States, you know, that's when we all kind of picked our clubs. And unfortunately, we all seemed to pick Arsenal right at the point where everything started to go downhill.
Right. Well, I'll tell you the thing. One of the things that I loved about them was the style that they played, you know, that Wenger ball, the beautiful game. That's, I think, for me, the most disappointing thing in the last couple of seasons is that we haven't really seen that, in my opinion, you know. It's been disjointed as all hell, at least the last 2 years.
Yeah, I think we saw it for a couple of games at the beginning of this year, but the second Cazorla went out, it went to shit, or went down the hill pretty fast.
Yeah, and it's something I know we've discussed in the past, but in past podcasts where we were a little, at least I know Alex was a little more critical of Wenger for setting up his entire team around one player who, you know, has had a few injury problems recently, getting up there in age.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you know, we talked about this, but just, I love Santi Cazorla, don't get me wrong. I mean, he's one of my favorite players to have watched in the past decade, just how he plays, but it's more the fact that there was not an adequate plan B in the same mold as Cazorla. You know, we basically had to change everything around system-wise in the middle of the season for a guy who we knew had a nagging Achilles injury. But, you know...
But on that, though, shouldn't we have at least... You know, we know he's not going to play every single game for us. All right? So we should have at least had something in plan for games where we're going to rotate him. You know, were we going to go out there with the same tactics in those games?
I mean, I think that was the plan. I think, you know, this kind of gets
Francis Coquelin and Aaron Ramsey can play that the same way. I don't know.
Yeah. I think that was the plan. I mean, I think it's a bad plan. I think my issue this year was, you know, he didn't really, once Cazorla went out, like last year when Cazorla went out, not to rehash that, but I don't think he really had the horses. He just didn't have the guys most of the time to make it work. Like, you have Flamini and Coquelin, you can't build a midfield that's going to work. Like, I'm sorry, it's just going to fail.
God, that's an atrocious midfield.
I actually got sad hearing those two names in sequence.
But this year, yeah, I know. I'm just moving past it as fast as possible. But this year he had the guys. I mean, this year he had Xhaka, he had Chamberlain, he had Ramsey. I mean, he had Elneny on and off being fit, but enough where I think this is what saddens me most, and getting on to what I think is really the question with Wenger is he won't try stuff anymore. He's gotten older, and oftentimes as people get older, they get more conservative. And he won't experiment nearly as much as he used to. And I think that's really what's killed him this year.
Do you see that as being, as him actually being conservative? Is it that he's stubborn? You know, for me, I think he's stubborn and just too attached to his style of play and his players. And I don't know if that's necessarily conservative, in my opinion.
Yeah, I guess that's right. I mean, stubbornness, conservative, kind of, I was using those interchangeably, probably not accurately. I think it's weird. I mean, I know that I, on Twitter, will often rant about Francis Coughlin. I've kind of become known for doing such a thing. I think it's weird because of all the players for Wenger to get attached to, this is not a Wenger-style midfielder. I mean, I've made the claim numerous times, this is the worst technique of any player to be a regular starter under Wenger for a long time. I mean, I don't think that's questionable. His technique is, he's not a Wenger-style player. He doesn't play that Wenger ball, but Wenger, for some reason, is attached to him, and I don't know why. I think it's really hard to figure out, but it's just more frustration with the manager, who I love.
With the Wenger ball thing, I mean, we've kind of seen an evolution in what's considered Wenger ball, because if you look at the Invincibles, that wasn't a team that was necessarily predicated on dominating the ball. That was a team that was predicated on, certainly guys comfortable on the ball, but also a team that just countered with blistering pace and power and technique. You know, like, they weren't necessarily a team that needed the ball to thrive. Whereas if this team doesn't have the ball, they're kind of hopeless, honestly. And so, I think, like, people said, like, when Vieira left, you know, Wenger decided to build the team around Cesc. And when Cesc left, things kind of went south and we kind of had to rebuild from there. So, there's certainly some merit in that. But, this team we have here isn't really one or the other. It's not a possession team because for large chunks of the season, we haven't been able to play that sort of fluid attacking football. But it's also not a great counterattacking team, bar one or two rare occasions.
And that's, I think that's spot on. And that goes back to the frustration with Wenger, is that clearly this isn't a team that can play the style he wants to play. So why haven't we seen other lineups? Why haven't we seen other tactics? It's been a 4-2-3-1 almost every single game. I think there was one cup game. It may have even been a Southampton. Yeah, that may have been the only one where we played an actual 4-3-3.
Yeah, and he did it for about, I think he kind of did it, and I was in Vegas for this game, so blame my memory, but he did it for 20 minutes against Chelsea until the guy who killed someone scored that goal, Marcus Alonso. He did kill someone.
It's funny how many people forget that, by the way, but continue. Sorry.
Sorry, I just have to get that. I have friends who are Chelsea fans. I just
got to get the dig in. No, we get you.
There's your first mistake, by the way, friends that are Chelsea fans.
I've made bad choices.
We all have those. We all have those that make those decisions.
They're also the ones who became Golden State Warrior fans 2 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
I agree. I agree that it hasn't worked, and I think it's hard. And I think I've listened to you guys past pods and kind of have had a similar evolution where I think the line I've used is, I'd rather win with Wenger than with anyone else, but I'd rather win with someone else than not win with Wenger. And at this point, it's just hard to see him changing. I mean, he's 67 years old, and I think it's very unlikely that he'll, suddenly get really detailed in training and coach a press and do stuff like that.
And it's funny you say that, because maybe it's the fact that, us as Americans, like, having grown up on this side of the pond, we didn't really have, easy made access to the game until maybe the Invincibles and then afterwards. So, we weren't really privy to the club's success before that, or to a lot of the club's history before that. So, was it one of those things where our perspective is sort of skewed because all we've known is Wenger. So we can't really compare it to anything else. Like, we, obviously we know the history of the club. I think we've all read up enough to understand it. But, do you think maybe when we see people who are very critical of Arsene Wenger in England, like specifically English fans, is it one of those situations where we just we're coming at it from a different perspective, basically? What do you think, Ian?
To me, everything the media does, it's all about clicks, especially the English media. I don't know that they really believe half the things that they say. They know that any little thing you say about an Arsenal team, an Arsenal fan, an Arsenal manager is going to cause a frenzy. Everybody's going to click that link and read it and tweet about it and talk about it. And that's why we see the narrative about Arsenal go the way it does. Now, there's certainly some truth to some of what they say. For me, I think that when we look back at the history of the club, and maybe it's just a perception thing, but it seemed like the club was always winning. And I'm sure that's really not the case. You know, they're always competitive, but they were never, you know, we weren't winning championships every single year.
Yeah. I mean, historical Arsenal is not United or Liverpool. I mean, it's just not the case. I mean, we had an 18-year trophy drought from the 70s until the late 80s.
Right. I mean, and then we had a few really, really good dominant years. And ever since then, it's been, well, you had the Invincibles. Why aren't you still winning titles?
Yeah.
And for me, that kind of sets some unrealistic expectations. And I mean, look at Liverpool. When's the last time that they've won the league? You can't say that they're not one of the biggest clubs in the world. And what kind of success have they had in the last 10 years? You know, but you don't see the same kind of criticism. You don't see the same
I think criticism, honestly.
That's probably where I'm gonna stop, because
no, it's just like back. I think that's an interesting point, because kind of what both of you are saying, Arsene Wenger set such a standard for himself that he was never going to be able to match afterwards. Because if you look at the circumstances, okay, you win a league title with the Invincibles, you know, and then right after that, you begin to build a stadium. So you know for a good, let's say six or seven years after that, you know you're going to be in a period where you can't necessarily compete. So that period is just about sustaining yourself, staying in Champions League. So you can only really look at the past 2-3 seasons as failures, if you really want to be critical, as failures. But
I don't mean to interrupt. If I don't say it, I'll forget it. Another thing changed right around that same time. That's where we saw a lot of really, really big money come into Manchester City and Chelsea, and it changed the playing field, you know?
Right. So, I mean, it was an Arsenal United league, and then those billions got involved.
Yeah. So kind of, I'll throw this to you, Calvin, with the, you know, obviously I mentioned the stadium, and then Ian obviously mentioned the billions that came in, like all those factors that kind of compounded at the same time, you know, like how much do you think that's contributed to the narrative that's on display right now?
A ton. I think it's a terrible combination of factors, right? You build a stadium before a massive explosion of TV deals, so not every club is making $200 million from TV revenue, so you have to actually pay the money. I mean, my slight rant on the stadium, and there's a good article on the SB Nation site, The Short Fuse, about this recently, but the article is about Kroenke, but it talked a little bit about the stadium, that the old ownership kind of really hurt the club there because they didn't put in any new cash. And my full-time job is in real estate finance, so I kind of do this stuff for a living. And it's like the only real estate deal I've ever seen in history where no one put in any new money. So the debt went from like manageable to really actually terrible. I think a lot of the Wenger stuff should be blamed on the old board, which was in the old ownership, which was supporters. I think, by the way, Spurs are about to experience the same problem because their owner can't put in a ton of cash, and they're going to have the same problem with their stadium unless they get new ownership, which I don't think the guy wants to sell it. I think it's, like you said, it's a terrible timing of factors, right? It's building a £450 million stadium in England before a revenue spike, and at the same time having some of the richest people in the world decide to buy clubs before. I know everyone mocks financial fair play, and it's basically a joke, but it would have limited what Abramovich and what the Dubai guys did with City. I mean, they couldn't do that right, now. Yeah. I mean, they couldn't spend 100 million pounds every summer when they were making, when their clubs made 100 million pounds in revenue. Like, you can't, right. you no, couldn't do that.
Very true. Yeah. And it's definitely, you know, like you said, it's really, it's an unfortunate timing and a little bit of bad ownership and management. And to me, that whole, I think when people look at Arsenal, they look at the club being Arsene Wenger and the players. So it's what the players do, and then everything else for as far as the management of the club, the running, the day-to-day, people just kind of, they look at the decisions the board makes and the owners make and pin that on Wenger, in my opinion.
I think Wenger's put himself, or I don't know if he's put himself, but he's allowed himself to be put in the position where literally everything is going to be pinned on him, good or bad. You know, like when things go right, you know, people are going to say, oh, look, you know, Arsene Wenger's building the successful project. When things go wrong, they're going to say, oh, classic Arsene Wenger couldn't get his team ready for Champions League or couldn't get his team ready for a big game away, whatever narrative you want to display. So for better or worse, he's kind of in the position where you can't write a story about Arsenal without writing some sort of indictment on Arsene Wenger, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And Ian, to what you said, I mean, I think some of that's narrative, but I think some of that's true. Like there's definitely a part of him, and I don't agree with all these narratives that like he doesn't want anyone to come in and challenge him, that like some journalists have put out that like, oh, he's just this power mad, power hungry Frenchman who just is like, stay away from my little kingdom. But I mean, I definitely think there's a part of him that's he is the sporting director, and that's like an unbelievably rare setup. And I think this kind of transitions into, you know, there was an article from Jeremy Wilson in the Telegraph this week that Arsenal are really looking to bring in a sporting director, maybe even if he stays. I mean, what do you guys think about that? I'm curious what people think about that.
I think it's a terrific idea if they appoint the right person. And I, Calvin, to your credit, like I saw, as soon as this article was posted, you made the point, like I saw Robert Pires throw his name out there. And you said rightly, in my opinion, what background does Pires have as a sporting director? You know, you can't just hire people based on nostalgia and based on what they did previously. You got to bring in someone who knows what they're doing. So, you know, Monchi, the guy at Dortmund, whose name I'm forgetting, Zork, I think, right? The guy at Dortmund, you know, a guy like that who is going to, you know, like who, once you give him a list of targets, you give him a plan A, B, C, he's going to get you one of those targets, and he's going to do it within a budget that you give him. If you do that, you alleviate so much of the burden on Arsene Wenger. And then, you know, he's put in a position where he can kind of spend his time in a different way, you know, whether that's trying to innovate in terms of training or things like that. You know, but at the same time, like, because things are where they are, and Ian, I'd love to get your take on this. Is it to the point where, like, just, you know, Arsene Wenger's too far gone to where implementing these little changes are going to do anything, you know, to the point where, like, even if you do this, but then the results still don't go your way, like, it's still ultimately going to come down to the manager, isn't it?
100%. Definitely. It's like we, you know, they say it's Arsenal, not Arsene Wenger FC. Well, Arsene and Arsenal, they really go together, as much as we don't want to say that everything is his fault. And yeah, I think it is. It's definitely past the point where we're bringing in that director over, you know, above Arsene's position. That's not going to take the blame off of him. Nor do I think he would allow the blame to be taken off of him. He's still going to go out there and take the brunt of everything in press conferences. And I mean, that's what he's always done. So for me, if a sporting director is to be brought in, it's only happening when Arsene decides to leave.
Well, so that transitions to a question, though. Like, the ultimate question, do you think Arsene Wenger leaves at the end of the summer? Not do you think he should, but do you think he will? Calvin, I'll throw that to you first.
Yeah, so really quick, back on Ian's point. Like, I think whether – I do not think he leaves. I don't think – well, one, the board don't want him to leave. I think that's pretty clear. The owner doesn't want him to leave. That's pretty clear. And I don't think he wants – he doesn't want to go. I mean, I think he still has confidence in his abilities that he can fix this. And he really wants to win that league title, and he wants to shove it up all the journalists' face. I mean, there's definitely a part of him that thinks that. And I guess my thing is, like, you're right. Like, I mean, the irony of a sporting director is that – just very quickly back on that – is that his failings haven't been the type of thing a sporting director would fix. I mean, a sporting director is going to handle transfers and going to handle player contracts. And I mean, we're not great at selling players. I think no one would disagree with that. But he's, you know, in general, we buy about as well as anyone in the world. I mean, we don't make a lot of mistakes. We don't spend a ton of money. But I mean, look at every other club. We don't have that many flops. I mean, I think that's what Wenger's good at. I think his faults, and I think from what we were talking about earlier, is on-field training and tactics. And I mean, is he going to bring in a coach, you know, an assistant to teach the press? I really don't see that happening. I mean, if he were, then I could totally see him staying. But I do think he's going to stay. I think the one caveat I'll put on that is PSG getting knocked out in the Champions League. It's very close to that ownership. I mean, all the stories that said if he wants to leave, he wants to win the Champions League. That's a squad that's set up to win the Champions League right now.
That is actually a really an interesting point, because I was thinking about, like, what would prompt Arsene Wenger to leave and go to another club. And I couldn't think of many clubs off the top of my head, but PSG was the one that kept coming to mind. And, you know, Ian, I'll kind of throw the same question to you, though. Like, do you think he leaves? If so, does he go to a PSG-type club? Or, you know, how do you kind of see things unfolding just over the next few months? Because I think we're kind of reaching at that point where whatever he's going to do, he's got to let us know pretty soon, because it's going to dictate your transfer policy. It's going to dictate your contract extensions with Alexis and Mesut Ozil and Oxlade-Chamberlain and Ramsey and guys like that. So what do you kind of see unfolding there?
You know, we talked about this in each of the last podcasts, probably 2 weeks ago and a month ago, and I think my answer has been different every time. 2 weeks ago, I was convinced that he was leaving. But now I'm not so sure. He just has this defiance about him in his press conferences where he just doesn't – like, he seemed like for a little while that he was – out of answers, didn't really know what to do. And, you know, I know for a fact that we talked about that a couple episodes ago. And that's what had me convinced before. But now, his comments recently, they definitely have me feeling like he's leaning towards staying. Now, is he doing that to try and take attention off of his players, to try and get him through this poor form that they've been going through since October? I don't know. You know, he's always the type to just kind of put it out there and try and redirect attention to himself and off of his player. So I don't know if that's what he's doing, but, you know, you talk about PSG, there was the links to Barcelona. If he's going to leave Arsenal, he's going to one of those big time clubs that, like you said, Calvin, can win the Champions League. And if one of those positions aren't available, I think he stays put, which is a really shitty position to put the club in. But you know what? The board is and the owner is putting the club in that position themselves. They can make the decision. You know, it's you tell Arsene Wenger, look, we need to know by April 1st. Make up your mind. You have this contract offer. You have a drop dead day. I don't care that he's run the club for 20 years. You know, it's you can't let him hold the club hostage. And really, if he hasn't told the club what he's doing, that's what he is holding the club hostage, because it's preventing them from reaching out to Allegri's representatives. It's preventing them from reaching out to Sampaoli's representatives or anybody else who they might want to potentially come in and fill the job. You know, that's going to put us behind the eight ball if he does decide to leave. So now we have to scramble around in the beginning of summer trying to find a sporting director and trying to find a manager, and that sets everything behind.
Yeah, because any manager you have is then going to have their list of targets that they want. And if you don't already have the wheels in motion on acquiring transfer targets by, honestly, like April or May, you're way behind. Because, you know, I've already read quotes, you know, to the effect from Jose Mourinho that United have their targets lined up. You'd imagine Pep Guardiola, after having gone out of the Champions League, he's going to have his targets lined up. So the player movement really, I'm curious to see how much that plays a factor into what he does, or vice versa, whether what he does has an effect on player movement. My gut feeling, and Ian, you and I have talked about this, but Calvin, I'd love for you to jump in as well. Like, I think Mesut Ozil stays because I think he loves the city of London. I think he's embraced the city of London, and I think he's become more well integrated amongst the team. Alexis, I'm 99% certain he leaves. And that's not based off of any inside information. It's just based on what's been reported, based on things about his interactions with teammates and the fact that he lives a very insulated life, I feel. And so I don't feel like living in London has the appeal for him that it does for someone else. I mean, the dude has his dogs and no girl, so realistically he could go anywhere. And I mean, I say that somewhat facetiously, but also realistically, if you have no emotional attachment to a city, you're obviously not as likely to stay. So Alexis is the one that I see leaving at this point. And if that's, you know, unless you bring in a guy like Allegri or Sampaoli, maybe that person convinces Alexis that, hey, things are going to be different now. But, Calvin, certainly interested to hear how you think the player moves affect the Wenger situation or vice versa.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think Ozil's going to stay. I think Ozil loves London. I think also compared to Alexis, he plays a less valuable position. So his options to move are going to be more limited. I mean, Alexis is, there aren't many guys who score 20 goals a year or 20 league goals a year. I mean, I know people are like, oh, we need a 30 goal striker. There aren't that many of them. And Alexis can do that. So he's going to have a lot of options. I think Ozil stays. I think the only reason Ozil hasn't signed now is basically insurance. He's basically protecting himself against Arsenal, the board, and Gazidis being an idiot and hiring like Eddie Howe or Ronald Koeman, and then he'd like get me out of here as fast as possible. And
yeah. Oh god.
Once he signed, he loses all that leverage.
I'm 100% with you on that. That's kind of what I've been saying all along as well, is, you know, when the whole controversy about his previous comments, when the media spun it to be that if Wenger leaves, he leaves. He wanted to know what was going on with the club. He wanted to know who the manager was going to be. This is going to be the last big contract that he signs in his career. He just wants to know.
Yeah.
And Ian, to your point, if I could just read some quotes from Mesut Ozil, he spoke to Bild, one of the German papers. He said, you know, Arsene Wenger is one of the main reasons I joined Arsenal, but I know that sometimes things go very fast in football and you can never plan something. This is why it would be wrong to say my future depends on my coach. I want to win the Champions League one day, preferably with Arsenal. I have one more year on my contract here. What do you guys take from that comment, Ian? You know, start with you, obviously, because you brought that up.
Music to my ears.
And what makes you
say that? That simple. He wants to stay. It's exactly like Calvin said, though. I mean, he wants to stay at Arsenal. He wants to win at Arsenal. He just doesn't want to play for Eddie Howe or Ronald Koeman. I mean, I think it's that simple. And I just, that comment makes me incredibly happy. Before we go on somewhere else there, though, what would you say, Alex? We did sell Alexis and use that money and went and bought Mbappe. You seem to have a little crush there, so I.
Oh, dude, no, I have no. It's not a little crush, and it's unhealthy because I think he's like 18.
He may have surpassed he's encroaching on the Marco Reus man crush.
No, like I mean, I love Reus, but at least Mbappe, like. If Alexis were to leave, I'll put it this way. If Alexis were to leave and you buy Mbappe, that's your best case scenario because and the three of us have talked about this offline before, but Arsenal are in a position now where I don't think they can buy the ready-made superstars anymore, you know, because I think those guys are out of your price range. Like the superstars, not stars. I'm talking superstars. So I think a guy with Mbappe who has the potential to become a superstar, yeah, you still might have to pay – I don't know, 70, 75 million at this point, honestly, because the dude is fucking things up and he keeps scoring and his value keeps increasing and he really needs to stop because he's going to escalate out of our price range. But all things considered, if you replace Alexis with Mbappe under the assumption that you were going to lose Alexis anyway, I'm not sure how you can, it's a downgrade in the sense that you don't have the proven production, you know, that kid is special and you know he's going to be special. Now, the question is, you can't just buy him. You have to buy supporting piece because there are so many holes in this team. The more I look at it, and certainly we'll get into that, but I'll throw that question back to you guys. Like, you lose Alexis and you buy Mbappe. Do you consider that a wash? Do you consider that a potential upgrade in the future?
I think it's a win. And I think this is weird to say it, and I love Alexis Sanchez, and he's awesome, and I've spent time in Chile, and he's a god there, and that was 2011, and that's really not an understatement. Like, that was when he was killing it with Udinese, and they love him, but that guy plays 100% all the time. He plays every summer for Chile. He plays every game, and he's 28. Like, the peak, the cliff is going to come, and we all know this, that the cliff is not – it's not kind. I mean, guys fall off a cliff and there's a chance that if you gave Alexis a 4-year contract that at 30, he just might, his legs might go. And
he might go like Van Persie did.
Yeah. I mean, I think we've seen this. I think all of us watch the NFL or to some degree, and like, it's like a running back in the NFL, right? When they go, it's not slow. They're done. And I think that's, strikers are often like that. They're go from good to done. And I mean, I love Mbappe, and I think the problem for Arsenal is it's a combination of both. What are you going to spend? Because whoever replaces Alexis is going to cost a stupid amount of money, a record-breaking fee, and also it's a combination of who can you attract. I mean, who's going to want to come to Arsenal? I mean, I love Mbappe, but he's clearly going to have offers from clubs that can pay more or have a better chance of winning things, have a better history of winning things. And I think Arsenal really need to do a better job. And they've clearly done it with Alexis, where they sold, you know, he should have gone to Liverpool that summer. I mean, they sold Suarez. They did that deal with Barcelona. He should have gone there. But we've got Wenger. We're in the Champions League every year. We've got London. And you know, that's why he's at Arsenal.
I think one of the things that we can sell, if let's just say that was to happen this summer, and we were to try and go get Mbappe, the other clubs that are going to be interested in him that are going to be more attractive, I mean, Barcelona, Madrid, they're going to have eyes on him. Chelsea, City, United. The one thing that we can offer him that really they can't is a place in the starting 11. You know, he's going to be, assuming Arsene and his love for Giroud doesn't continue to step up another notch. But I mean, we do still have, I mean, we have that piece over some of the other big clubs. And, you know, we are Arsenal. I think we get a little bit jaded sometimes looking at the club, thinking that the shine and lure of Arsenal is fading. And I don't know that it is. I don't have the perspective that a world-class player would, obviously. But to me, I feel like we just get jaded by that, by some of the struggles, that we're just too close to it to really see that, you know what, it is Arsenal Football Club. It is one of the world's most famous, one of the biggest clubs in the world, and it has to still have a draw.
It does have a draw, but when your Champions League when your results in the Champions League aren't improving at all, when your league position, you know, fluctuates between 2 and 4, but I mean, ultimately media narratives, and this is kind of what's frustrating, I feel like they do play some role, even a little bit subconsciously in a player's mind, when you constantly hear, oh, look at what City are building with Guardiola, or look at Conte at Chelsea and look what they're building. You know, like I do think those things weigh on a player's mind. And if they don't, the wages certainly do. You know, like, so all these factors do tend to combine, I think, to some effect. But, you know, I think there's still a draw. I think you have to take advantage of it while we have it, though. And Wenger, you know, the last couple few summers, obviously, with Ozil, you saw that draw. I don't Mesut Ozil doesn't come to Arsenal without Arsene Wenger. There's no way. You probably say the same for Alexis. And then, you know, the guys like Cech and Xhaka and Mustafi, you know, I don't know how much that played a factor. But you have to still take advantage while that draw is there. And if not, then you better bring in a manager who can attract that type of talent. And so the Eddie Howes and the Ronald Koemans, like, Jesus Christ, if that happens, I'm moving to Dortmund FC forever.
Dortmund, exactly. I was just going to say, go get me their director, their sporting director, and let's build our club like they build theirs. Because, dude, I am so incredibly jealous of how they run that club.
Yeah.
I'm obsessed with that team right now.
Yeah. They have, like, them and City have basically every prospect in the world. I mean, the problem, so a couple of things. Like, one, the Dortmund sporting director is an ex-player, so all the Dortmund people online have said, like, he's never leaving. So otherwise, he would have been my number one. Two, like, one downer on Mbappe. His agent, I think, is George Mendes.
Oh.
So basically just, so, like,
he's going to United.
Yeah. Like, that's my worry, by the way, for the summer, is that Zlatan leaves and he goes to United, or Costa goes to China, which I think is probably going to happen, and he goes to Chelsea. So, but I agree. Like, and Arsenal can offer minutes. I mean, that's one thing we can definitely offer. We can offer the chance to be a superstar, and you will be the guy. I want to clarify my earlier statement about, you know, Arsenal attracting players. Like, I think we're definitely, like, one of the 10 best teams in the world at attracting players, right? It's a great club to come play for. The problem is the other clubs we're talking about, Mbappe. I mean, we're talking about Barcelona, Real Madrid, Manchester United. That's a different level. Like, I think Arsenal fans, you're right, there's a level of being jaded too much and thinking, oh, we're crap. But there's also a level of acknowledging, like, Arsenal is not the biggest team in the world. And I know that people hate to say that, but it's a great team. And there are tons of teams that would love to be in our position, but we're probably in the same class and a little more money, a little less success recently than your Dortmunds, your Atletico Madrids, it's great. And, you know, you can still win a lot of stuff from there, but it's really hard to compete with, you know, United for a player or Chelsea for a player when they can pay 70 grand more than we can.
Right. I mean, you're spot on with the comparison there, because we're not in that top tier. And part of the frustration with fans is we expect to get results like those teams in the top tier. You know, we're not United, which hopefully they stay in six forever. We're not Real Madrid. We're not Barcelona. but we have the expectations that those fans do. We don't come into it with a realization that, you know what, we really aren't as big as those clubs, so we're not going to win titles with the same kind of consistency that those clubs do.
It's funny because I feel like we're caught between two worlds, if that makes sense, because it's like Calvin and you, Ian, you said there's that top tier of your, financially speaking, Real Madrid, Barcelona, Manchester United, Bayern Munich. Below that, you have your PSG, City, Chelsea, Juventus. And then below that, you have your Dortmund, Atletico, Arsenal. I don't know.
Yeah.
So I think those are roughly your tiers. So, yeah, you're high enough to where people look at you as one of the big clubs, so you should be getting big club results, but you're not high enough to where you actually have the financial firepower to consistently stay with those clubs. Meaning a club like Arsenal has to almost have everything come together perfectly for a season, for everything, you know, for everything to work out for a title run, which makes, and I'm not trying to like retread on previous history, which makes last season one of the most frustrating seasons in all of football for me, because you had a season where City weren't great, Chelsea sucked, United sucked. I mean, Spurs are Spurs, so they suck. So you had all these factors, and you had a squad that looked ready-made to compete all season, and it didn't quite come together. And I think we've kind of talked offline about this before. You knew Guardiola was coming in. You knew Conte was coming in. So there was a very short window to where things could, you know, to where we controlled our own destiny. And now I think we're kind of, I don't know what the term is, but we're kind of at the mercy of these other clubs not succeeding rather than us thriving at the top, if that makes sense.
We're not adapting. We're not being proactive.
Yeah, I think it's that. I mean, I think the way it is now is Arsenal could have their A-plus season where everything went right and we could still not win the league. Like, because if United have their A-plus year, they have way more money than everyone else. Like, you could read the stuff. If they're smart, they should win. And I think the problem is if you're Arsenal and you accept that that's the circumstance, you need to say, okay, where can we make up the gap, or where can we give ourselves the best chance? And that's my issue with Wenger. And it really comes down to, it's just his on-field coaching and the way he manages training sessions and that is that, like, and I hate going back on this player, and it's really, I'm really not ripping on the player. I'm really ripping on Wenger for playing him, but
here it comes.
He played Coughlin against Liverpool. We know this guy cannot play against the press. We've seen even when he was good, he couldn't play against the press. He doesn't have the technique. He doesn't have the passing. He doesn't have, more important than anything, he doesn't have the positional sense. We just knew what was going to happen that day. We all knew it. And I mean, maybe you could say, yeah, everyone else was hurt and people were hurt. But he could have played Oxlade-Chamberlain there. I mean, Oxlade-Chamberlain played in that game and he played on the wing. I think
that's a great point. That player and the three of us have all talked about him at length, but I think it does bear repeating. And I don't remember who it was. It might have been at Gunnar Santi. He said, like, of all the hills for Wenger to die on, it's the hill of Coughlin that he's going to die on. And I read that. And I was like, that's brilliant. You know, for a guy, and I think when he mentioned it earlier, but like for a guy who's predicated his entire coaching career on the beautiful game, attacking football, you have now been willing to risk your legacy on a guy you brought back from Charlton, whose only claim to fame was he was better than Arteta and Flamini. That's literally it. And now
dead Arteta.
Yeah, dead Arteta, not even prime Arteta. So like, you've revolved everything around this player, and now he's become a mainstay of the starting 11. You know, bar one or two games, like he's largely one you're going to assume is in the starting 11, and it is indicative of where I think Wenger has kind of lost touch with the game. You know, like bar N'Golo Kanté, because Kanté's a freak. You don't have pure destroyers in the game anymore. At least not in the way that he's being played, where he's not even sitting deep and just cleaning things up. He's just this one-man press. Unfortunately, he has no control over his body. So he'll slide into things, he'll fall over, he's out of position, and he'll leave tons of space behind him. And Ian, I know like you've expressed frustration with the Xhaka-Coquelin pairing and how those pieces just don't fit together. But none of the pieces fit together in our midfield at this point, wouldn't you say?
They haven't fit together. I won't say that they can't fit together. I don't think we've seen them. I mean, full, you know, disclaimer, I don't know as much about football as Arsene Wenger. Okay, let's just bump for the record so everybody knows that. He knows way more about football than I ever will. But the way he's used those players in midfield this year, it makes no sense to me, and I've tried so hard, and I know we've had the discussions about it, saying, what is he doing using Coquelin as a box-to-box and letting Xhaka sit? Like, I don't know. You know, so for me to say the pieces we have in our team won't work and that Coquelin and Xhaka and Ramsey and Ozil, we can't fit those players into a team.
I mean, the irony is we've seen it work. We saw it work. The first, when we played Bayern in the second leg, and I know, and spare me all the stuff, and not you guys, but everyone who's listening, just if you're already thinking, oh, but Bayern didn't care, like, it's Bayern Munich. They always care. Their goal is to, they're German. Their goal is to come out and humiliate you and make you look bad. That's why they scored 5 goals on us when the tie was over. But for 15 minutes, we played level with what, arguably they're the best team in Europe right now? I mean, on current form.
I wouldn't even say level. I thought we outplayed them.
Yeah. At worst, we played them level for 50 minutes because he did what I think everyone on this panel has been wanting him to do for basically a long time. I mean, he played Giroud and that was depressing. But besides that, I don't understand, by the way, the plan of this is where I also think he's losing it. If your plan is to play Welbeck, but then he goes out and you go to Giroud, totally different player. Totally different tactical setup. But my point is, even with that, we were level with Bayern Munich for 15 minutes. And we really, I think you could argue in that we controlled midfield with Xhaka, Ramsey, and Oxlade-Chamberlain. And I think it's very clear. And I watched the Bundesliga last year. I watched Granit Xhaka. He was linked to Arsenal for a long time. He's a great passer. He's an unbelievable passer. But he is not a great athlete. Like, he would not be an NFL player. He just can't move. Like, I like the guy, but he can't move. So you've got to protect him. And you got to put guys next to him who can run for him. And I don't know. I want Wenger to stay. I think Wenger should go. I think he's going to stay. But moving back to this, like, to an earlier point, I think there's a good chance the sporting director does come in if he stays. And I think the good thing is it probably makes the transition easy. Because let's face it, when Wenger leaves, this transition is going to be really rough. Like, he does have his hand in a lot of areas of the club that way more than any other manager. I mean, he's the last of the old school managers. What do you guys think about that?
Ian, I'll let you jump in on that.
Yeah. I think that's a great point. And I don't know that I really thought about it that way. I know that I've thought about how difficult the transition is going to be, but I hadn't really thought about bringing in the sporting director now and keeping Wenger on for another season or two to kind of ease that transition. And, you know, that's something that has terrified me about when he finally would leave, is because there's nothing else in place. He does everything. So if he were to leave, like I said before, earlier on, you would need to bring in a sporting director. You would need to bring in a manager, a whole new scout. You would need to bring in everything. There's nothing in place to help that new manager. So I think that would be huge. And while I don't think it will happen, I'm with you. I think it should.
I think actually it's kind of what Ian said. I hadn't really thought of it in the perspective of Wenger does have his hand in everything. So maybe that transition for a year for the long-term benefit of the club, I don't necessarily know for on-field success, I don't think we'd see it, but for the long-term benefit of the club, would that one-year transition be a good thing? Yeah, probably would. Also, I just wanted to get this off my chest. You guys were talking about Xhaka. Is it any coincidence he played one of his best halves of the season when he had actually two functional midfield players with him? That was literally the best he's looked, because he was winning the ball back because other guys were positioned correctly so he could read the game the way he knew how, and then promptly get things moving forward. But I digress.
On that point, real quick. Okay, go ahead. I'll come back to it. Sorry.
No. It's just like, so with the sporting director, I am curious to see how things would move transition-wise, because just using Jock as an example, I know he was a guy that, like, was personally scouted, like, what, 29, 30 times, something like that. And how much of that was Wenger saying, like, look, I know exactly what I want, and I have this idea for the club, and this, you know, you all just need to go execute it. Whereas with the sporting director, I think while you give a sporting director a plan, I think sporting directors oftentimes have a little more flexibility into how they address that plan. You know, a manager might give you 10, 15 targets, but say, like, look, just get some of these guys and I'll make it work. That, I think that's the more traditional arrangement for a manager, but, maybe I'm looking at like clubs like Sevilla or Dortmund, you know, that we talked about to in length. Just they, I don't think they necessarily go out and just say, hey, we have three targets, we're going to get all of them. They say, look, here's a few guys that fit the way we want to play. Figure out a way to get these guys within our budget. If not, move on to plan B. So what do you guys, what would you guys say about that?
Yeah, Ian, I'll let you go first on that.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, man.
Well, that's a short answer.
I was trying to piece together a little bit that I heard of your question because I was double checking something that I was going to ask you. So Calvin, I'm going to send it to you and try and gather, put something together here.
So I think the way it would work is like the manager, ideally in a setup, the manager would go to the sporting director and early in the season and say, hey, I want a deep lying playmaker who can do X, X, and X. The sporting director then, like, this is basically how the NFL works, right? I mean, kind of. And then, or most US sports, which I think all of us are familiar with, and the GM or the sporting director goes out and finds the guys and narrows it down to a couple, and then they discuss with the manager, and they're like, we like this guy the best. Okay, let's try and buy him. Okay, we couldn't get him. Okay, let's go to the next guy. I mean, I think that's kind of how it would work. And I think frankly, Wenger's just doing too much. I mean, I'm not sure he'd be a great detailed coach. And I kind of think from his comments about football and how he wants it to be played, he wouldn't do it anyway, but I'm not sure he has the time. I mean, he just hasn't delegated. He is a little bit of a micromanager. And like on the sporting director side so far, it's been great because he's bought really good players. But yeah, I mean, I kind of think they're going to bring in a sporting director anyway, because I think it's clear that if Wenger signs, this is his last contract. I mean, can we all agree on that? I mean, I think.
Oh, yeah, I would hope so.
I would agree, yeah.
I mean, unless he won the treble or something, and then we're like, yeah. I mean, I think at that point, everyone would be like, you know what? You want five more years? You got it. But even then,
he walks off into the sunset because he finally accomplished what he wanted to.
Yeah, right. So this is probably his last deal. 99% sure. And the only reason I think he'd stay after this is things that all of us would be happy with. So I think even if he stays, they bring in a sporting director. Cause I think the people running the club, I don't think they're stupid. Like I know some people think the people running Arsenal are stupid, but they didn't generally get to those jobs by being stupid.
They're not business. They're not football people though.
Yeah.
They're not stupid people, but they don't have the experience in football.
Yeah, but I think organizational, but it's organizational structure, right? Like Arsenal is a big business. It's a big company. It's a big club. And there's a single point of failure right now. I mean, and you know, if you're looking at an organization and if one guy goes down, the whole company's screwed. I mean,
but you know, if they were on top of it and they had the mindset that you're giving them the credit for having, why would there be a 2-year deal? Sitting there waiting for him to sign. Like if they weren't stupid and if they knew what they were doing, wouldn't they have brought a sporting director in last year? Or wouldn't they have a plan in place, which clearly they don't.
But I think they do.
They don't. How do they? They have a two-year deal sitting there. They're just waiting for him to decide what he wants to do.
So I think your earlier point, and I wanted to get back to this, and Alex, I'll let you in after this, but I think Ian's point about how they're not reaching out to managers now, I strongly disagree with that. I think there are ways to reach out and to reach out through intermediaries and lawyers. And this is all for press deniability and to say, oh no, we never talked to him, but my buddy, who's a lawyer who we happen to pay and did this as a service, who did this reaching out. Like I know lawyers often do this. Like it's generally lawyers who do that. And my bet is that, I mean, you read the press and I know it's the British press and I know it sucks, but there are parts of it that are like not absolutely horrible. And even those guys have started to report out that like there are shortlists being made, there are initial contacts being made. Maybe I'm just willfully ignorant here. And it totally could be.
But I hope you're right.
I think they've got, my bet is that they have a list, and I guess my hope is, and I totally agree with you, by the way, they need to tell Wenger April 1st, we gotta know. And you can't do this. Wait till we finish. Wait to see if we finish in the top four, how the fan mood is at the end of the season. Make the decision now. Because otherwise, I agree with Alex, you are killing the club. I mean, We did the Shaka deal like what, the 1st of June? You don't do that in a week.
Yeah.
I mean, that was done. We probably started meeting with the club and the agents and all that, what, middle of April at the latest? I mean, probably 1st of May.
Probably even January before we signed him.
We were scouting him for, I mean, you don't scout a guy 30 times unless you're well prepared to pay what, $35 million for him. But going back to kind of your point about the timeline of everything, if the thought is, oh, let's wait and see what happens in May, and if we get top four, people will be in a good mood and we can sign that 2-year deal that's been on the table. That's not going to fly this time around. I don't think it's going to be enough to redeem everything. You can win the FA Cup, and believe me, that'd be great. Maybe he even beats Spurs in the FA Cup final, and who knows? Maybe they think, oh, well, if all this happens, he can sign that deal and people will be okay. I think the fan perspective, the fan mood has turned too much for that to be acceptable. I will agree with Calvin on this. And he and I have talked about this. I do think there's a list because I don't think you just hire a manager once your manager leaves. I think you have an indication one way or another of where things might be headed, and you plan contingencies. And I think there are probably 5 or 6 names on this list of realistically attainable targets. I mean, I'm just going to throw names out there. You look at Allegri, you look at Tuchel, you look at Jardim at Monaco, Sampaoli, Nagelsmann at Hoffenheim. That's right. Nagelsmann at Hoffenheim, and maybe you have Koeman at, or Howe as like 6th. Not that I want that, but just to say they're down there. So I do think you have to plan for contingencies. But the sense that I've been getting just from reading things is that the longer this drags out, the more it does feel like we're waiting on fan mood to change and just hoping things go right. The problem with that is if it doesn't change and things just get worse and worse, well, now not only have you lost time to find a suitable replacement, Alexis is probably further along to leaving. All of a sudden, you might lose other guys. Like, you've seen rumors about Oxlade-Chamberlain possibly entertaining offers. I don't know if that's agent talk or not. I mean, we never know with these things, but there's the risk there. And, you know, but kind of transitioning from strictly manager talk, you know, regardless of who the manager is, I mean, obviously each manager is going to address different spots, but, and you can even mention that, like, depending on what manager what comes in, what spots in the team, just looking at the team and the squad that we have, need to be addressed in the summer. Right now, and I'll start off on this just because I've been watching a lot of Monaco recently, and I've been watching Mendy play at left back, and I was like, I want that guy. I was in love with Gaia at Valencia. I'll take Gaia, I'll take Mendy, or, you know, depending on if we go to like a 3-5-2, if Allegri came in, I would take a guy like Ricardo Rodriguez. But, you know, center midfielder, you need a needle type player, similar to Cazorla in the sense that he can kind of dribble through midfield, but also pick out passes. So a guy like Tielemans or Paredes at Roma or Kevin Campbell, you know, guys like that. But like, I'm curious, and I know I rambled on this one, but just what positions would you guys address depending on who comes in, honestly, if it's Wenger or if it's someone else? And Ian, I'll throw that to you.
Ultimately, it's so hard to say when you don't know who the manager is going to be. You know, we can assume that if Wenger stays, there's not going to be any massive turnover. He's going to add a left back. He's going to add another forward, probably a midfielder. You know, our typical summer, one starting quality player and a couple fringy backup quality players. That's what our summer is going to be, if Wenger stays. Another manager, it depends on who it is. You know, there's a ton of guys that you could see leaving. You could see Nacho and Gibbs leaving. You could see... I mean, I would like to see Giroud. Yeah, okay, keep him on the bench, bring somebody in so he doesn't go, so he doesn't have to start. But you could see Chamberlain leaving. Lucas, you could see leaving. Does Jack come back? What about, what's Aaron Ramsey going to do? You know, there's so, I think the future of the players in this squad, it's more up in
the
air.
It's pretty manager dependent, right?
It really is, but it's more up in the air than I think I've ever seen it. You know, even if Wenger stays, I think there's a lot of stuff that's up in the air.
Yeah. I think I could say, I think no matter who comes in, they're going to bring a first 11 caliber left back. I'm not going to say they're going to be a guaranteed starter. I kind of think Gibbs is going to go just because this is really the time. I mean, I think it was the time 3 years ago, but it's definitely the time now. He's just not progressing and he's not going to be a starter. But I think a left back, you're definitely right. I think the guys you mentioned are the type of guys they look at. Probably a central midfielder, but I don't know. If Oxlade-Chamberlain or Ramsey stay, maybe you could talk me into not needing a starting 11 central midfielder. I think we can all agree we probably need a plan on Alexis going, so you got to bring in a forward and a starting caliber forward. I'm not sure who that is. I'm not sure if that's a prospect, if that's, you know, a younger guy or a more proven guy. You're going to have to bring in someone there, or the fans are just going to lose their minds.
Oh, they can lose their shit.
They can definitely lose their shit.
I was trying to keep it lower, but yeah, they can. The fans are going to lose their shit on that. I mean, if we sold Alexis and went Liverpool and bought Ricky Lambert, I mean, I'm pretty sure that the Emirates would be burned down tomorrow.
Yeah.
And possibly
pitchforks and torches, man. Pitchforks and torches.
Possibly, rightfully so. By the way,
No, there's no possibly. It would be fully deserved.
Yeah, you replace Luis Suarez with Ricky Lambert, it's your starting number 9, and you deserve pain. But I think tons of guys could go. I mean, it's very unlikely that the next manager is going to like both Olivier Giroud, Theo Walcott, and Lucas Perez. Like, these are very different types of players. Fingers just, like, picked weird combinations. Like, there's no unified set of type of player he likes. I mean, it's pretty rare that the same manager would like Francis Coughlin and Granit Xhaka. So one of them would go.
That's true. I mean, look at all the players. I mean, Coughlin, Xhaka, Ramsey, Ozil, Cazorla, they're all different.
I
can see where he's going with that, because that should provide a versatility to your squad.
But he plays 4-2-3-1 every week.
But then he doesn't take advantage of the versatility that he brings in. So
yeah. So I mean, yeah, I think a lot is gonna change. I mean, but I don't know. I mean, this is the hard thing, right? Not all often rant about this online. It's like there's so much as fans we don't know, especially with English sports, because the media is so much worse than US sports, just generally with access and all that. So Wenger definitely needs to tell the club he's leaving by April 1st. I'm not sure if we're going to do that personally. Like, if he's going to go, he should go ahead. I want him to announce it just totally selfishly, because he deserves a send-off. I mean, this is a man who won 3 league titles, reached the first ever Champions League final for the club, first ever, true European Cup final. I know they won, like, one of the lower cups before, but it's not the same as the big boy cup. You know, I just hope that if he goes, that he doesn't wait until May 15th to let us know. I mean, that would be really sad, I think, if he went and he didn't get the send-off he deserved. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think he's going to stay. But I do think a sporting director will be brought in. I'm willing to put my neck out on that. I mean, I think Jeremy Wilson came out and said they're ramping it up, and he's generally pretty good.
Yeah, and I completely hope you're right. That would be huge for the club. That would be something that a few months ago I would have said that Arsene never would have been okay with.
But do you think a lot of that, and we've talked about the transition and stuff like that, but do you think the fan divide is so deep right now that even if he did that, it would change anything around the atmosphere of the club? No, I
don't think it would at all. But does he care?
I think you have to to some extent. I mean, I think he tends to be quite oblivious about certain things, but I also think he's an extremely intelligent guy. He speaks like, what, 7 languages? So he's a smart guy. Like, he knows how to read things. His comments don't give that away sometimes, but I think he knows that would just be more of a stopgap.
Yeah, solution. I think his actions have in the past. I mean, I know you guys might know who Tim Stillman is, and he's brought up this point. You know, before the FA Cup final against Hull, that contract was on the table, and he didn't sign that one until after the Cup final. And it's not that he thinks he's a bad manager if he loses one game. I mean, one game can be fluky. It's that if he didn't win that Cup final, the pressure would have been awful, and the fans would have been awful, and he would have gone. I think if we had lost the Cup to Hull, he would have gone. And so I think he does care. I agree, Ian, not that much, but to some degree. I mean,
yeah, I'm just playing a little bit of devil's advocate there. I really think, to me, he cares about the club. He cares about the fans. Sometimes his comments, you know, in his press conferences don't seem to, you know, they put it across that he's out of touch and doesn't really know what's going on. I find that hard to believe because, like you said, Alex, he is an extremely intelligent man, and he loves Arsenal. It's been his life for the last 20 years. So for me, yeah, he cares. And he's also said if we finish fifth and lose this round of the FA Cup, I do think he goes. You know, it's not the way your club should be run based on just a couple of games, making your decision on who your manager is going to be. But I think he goes. If we miss Champions League and don't win the FA Cup, it's over. If we get fourth, if we win the FA Cup, I could see him sticking around.
And then
that sporting director needs to get brought in.
If the last thing you said happens, we're sitting here having this conversation in another year, then
for sure,
right?
Doesn't that
instability? I mean, that's problematic, isn't it?
Absolutely,
totally. I mean, especially. What if he stays, he's probably going to do at least some level of rebuild, right? He's not going to be an immediate contention to win the league next year, probably. I mean, if we're being totally realistic.
Oh, no, I agree. If United spend like I think they're going to, City, you know, are going to, Chelsea are going to build on something that's already really good. And then and this is a long shot, but maybe Liverpool and Tottenham take a break from being complete morons for like one summer to where maybe one
never
of them
going
to
take that break. That's something that I'm, more confident about that.
Liverpool will never leave the 1980s. You can always talk about the 1980s. You just can forever. And Istanbul.
Yes. That's one word that'll keep Liverpool alive for the rest of my life, probably. Well, it might be 2040 and we haven't won a title in forever, but remember Istanbul? No, because most of your fans weren't alive back then. But
your point about the instability, though, is spot on. And that's kind of where it goes back to me and not being super confident that the board has a plan. You know, sure, they have a contingency. They have a list of managers that they're going to go to. I'm sure of that, but my God, if really they're going to wait, like I said, I think they're going to do, if they're really waiting to see what happens in the FA Cup, or if we get fourth by winning the last game of the year to jump Tottenham into fourth, I mean, what are they doing? I mean,
yeah. You can't run it that way. You just can't. I mean,
but for all we know, they have a decision. They know he's not coming back. And they have Allegri and a sporting director lined up. And Allegri's already said, look, talk to his sporting director, the future sporting director, and said, these are the kind of players that I want or the guys that I want. Maybe they have all of that planned, and they're just masters of PR, leaving us in the dark, and we have no idea.
I mean, Arsenal do like half their transfer deals come out of absolutely nowhere. I mean, they have been known to keep stuff when they actually want to. It's quiet. I mean, I remember I was in New York for when they played the Red Bulls a couple of years ago. That was when the Callum Chambers rumors came, and we were all like, who's that guy? And 2 days later, the deal was done. I mean,
same with Lucas Perez, right?
Was it Cazorla that 2 days before that deal, Arsene Wenger said, I don't know who this player is?
Yeah. Well,
I
mean, Nacho said that it was the transfer deadline day, and Santi called him up at 7 in the morning and said, Nacho, do you want to come to play for Arsenal? And he was an Arsenal player by 8 p.m. I mean, less than 12 hours, he didn't even know about the club.
Right. So I'm not sure that gives me confidence that the club has.
It's funny how English media works. I literally saw a story a couple days ago. It said Allegri has already agreed to take over as Arsenal manager and has already picked out his first target, Savage from Lazio. I was like, okay, well, that's great. I guess future settled, summer settled then. We already know. But just like you're going to hear so many of these rumors thrown out over the next 3 to 4 months, right? Until something is not even 3 to 4 months, like 2 months, until something is settled. And I hate that atmosphere of uncertainty around the club. Maybe it doesn't affect the players much because they're professionals. You would think they can look past that. But even from a fan perspective, just the constant infighting and bickering and I hate everything being categorized into Wenger in, Wenger out. I think there's so much nuance that is lost there. Like, I love Arsene Wenger the man, but tactically, I can absolutely admit he's leagues behind a guy like Conte right now. Like, I don't think you can deny that. You know, even if he doesn't have the access to the money that Conte does, Conte didn't spend insane money this summer. You know, he really didn't. If all things considered. He bought a guy that failed at Sunderland in Marcos Alonso. Yeah, he bought Conte, and that guy solves a lot of problems on his own. But then it's ultimately about getting the best out of the personnel you have. And I don't think Arsene Wenger gets the best out of the personnel he has. I think, you know, there's such a mismatch, like a mishmash. That's not a word. There's such a weird combination of players on this team. And I think Calvin might have brought it up earlier. Just like, there's not like... You have Giroud, who's a target striker, but then you have Welbeck, who's a mobile striker, but then you have Alexis, who's more of like a drop deep and make things happen striker. Like, there's no plug and replace sort of thing. So where if Giroud goes out and you want to play a target style, you don't have anyone to put in for him. If Oxlade-Chamberlain goes out as a pure winger, you don't really have another pure winger you put in for him. Or like Iwobi as your wide creator, we don't have another one like that. So you just have all these players who fit certain roles, but like you have to build towards a cohesive system. And I think that's my biggest gripe with Wenger at this point. And Ian, I'll throw it to you. Maybe, tell me I'm wrong on this one, because it frustrates me to see like just these random puzzle pieces that don't fit and make a cohesive picture.
And I'm with you completely there. And I think we've been there for, geez, I don't know. Back to November when we talked about, if we go back and listen to what we said in October, we said, we're not playing well. We're getting the results. But our form's going to come around. And I think the same thing we said in November, we're not playing well, but we're getting the results. Our form's eventually going to come around. They're going to figure out this team. They're going to figure out how to piece everybody together. Well, we're now sitting halfway through March and we're not playing well. The results really aren't coming and I don't see us putting it together in the last month and a half of the season.
Yeah.
You know, it's
I think
Yeah, go I ahead. Mean,
I think we're Yeah. I mean, I think this is might be the last thing I say, but I hate saying this, but like I do think we're gonna finish behind Spurs. I think we're probably
no, we're not. No, we're not. Awful. You, no,
I know. I
just so,
I
know. Just so no, you I, know, guys, listeners, you're gonna notice a little blip in the recording where it doesn't make sense how something is spliced together because something was said that will not be aired on this podcast. I will be cutting that out.
Fair. Let's just say this. I do not think we're going to finish in the top four. We might. I mean, who knows? We're Arsenal. We are better at finishing in the top four and pulling out results at the end than anyone. And God knows after last year, I don't think I've stopped laughing since 5-1 Newcastle. But I don't know. I think Wenger wants to stay, but I think there is a – despite the fact that I've said I think he will stay, I think there's a very good chance that there's managerial change this summer. And if there's not, we will be having the same conversation again. Arsenal will be scrunching for top four, no realistic shot of winning the league. Partially through no fault of our own, other clubs have more money, but as we've talked about. But you know, we're not going to give ourselves the best shot. And I hate that it has to end that way, this way for him, which is kind of why my dream is that we go, we get fourth, we win the FA Cup. And he says, you know what? I'm sick of all this fan mess. I'm sick of it. Me right off in the sunset beating Spurs in the FA Cup. So what I'm hoping for, and then Sampaoli and Monchi come in the summer and we win the treble in 3 years.
I'm all right with that.
Problem solved.
It's hard to disagree with that picture you painted right there. Certainly winning the treble in a few years would be spectacular. Beating Spurs anytime in any game, even if it's youth team, I don't care. It's just that it always makes my day. So on that note, we are going to wrap this up. We really went in on that Arsene Wenger discussion, but there's so much – there's so much to get into, and it's such an interesting discussion as, you know, well, to see what's going to happen, because none of us have known the club in any way other than led by Arsene Wenger. So it's definitely going to be a period of uncertainty. And we're really putting a lot of faith in a board and ownership that has given us no reason to put trust and faith in them. So it's scary. And all we can hope for is that they make the right decisions, put the right people in place, and get us back to glory. That's what all of us want. So,
amen.
So hopefully it picks up.
It's tough. I mean, I think you can hear the uncertainty in all of our voices just because we don't know what's going to happen. And that part kind of sucks, because I don't think, like, even if there was uncertainty, but there was hope, then all of a sudden the vibe changes, like where you have something to look forward to. Or, you know, if Arsene Wenger, and I'll just wrap up on this, if Arsene Wenger announced today, I'm leaving, end of the season, all of a sudden, I think the players get rejuvenated a little bit. You know, you play for the manager, you know, you may maybe make top four, maybe you don't. I don't know. I mean, that a lot of that is down to the teams around us too. But all of a sudden, you know, if you go on a good run in the FA Cup and win it, potentially he leaves on a high, you then have a succession plan in place, and then you have the right guys come in, a good summer, and then, you know, who knows from there. But, you know, realistically, we might not know for another month or two, and that's the most frustrating part. But, you know, certainly there's a lot to dig into, and we've only kind of scratched the surface, but that'll make part two even more fun. But I'll take this opportunity to wrap up. And Calvin, usually at the end of every episode, we just tell the people how they can find us on Twitter. And so I'll throw that to you. How can the people find you on Twitter and interact with you?
Yeah, it's just my name, at Calvin Masterson. Please, if you're going to try and come and defend Francis Coughlin, please do not. please do not. By the way, it's Calvin, C-A-L-V-I-N. You'd be shocked at how much people can misspell that name.
That's upsetting, actually, that people would misspell that.
I mean, you could put a K in the beginning of it.
Oh, God. I don't think that thought would ever occur to me.
Trying to figure out how you can misspell it.
I'm with you.
If you've ever read comics, it shouldn't be that hard. But, you know, I do not have a pet. I do not have a pet named Hobbs. So
there you go.
All right.
Yeah. And then this is Alex. You can find me at UFGooneraJ. You can find the podcast at EurosnobPod. Also, Facebook.com/EurosnobPod. And Ian, how can the folks find you?
At GunnersFan6.
All right. Simple.
I got that.
Alex, good luck to your Gators.
Yes, I might actually go on Saturday. I might drive up to Orlando to check that out. If
they're going
to
lose.
Enjoy the snow, Ian.
You know what? It's melting, and I get to enjoy St. Patrick's Day in Buffalo, which
sucks.
You're looking for a party, man. That's
all five people there. No, it'll be
great. Yeah.
All right, you'll see.
No, but in all seriousness, I've really enjoyed this, and Calvin, we've enjoyed having you on, and certainly we'll do it again real soon. And, you know, maybe at the end of the season, we can do a little bit of a roundup of where things are, because hopefully by then we have an idea of where things stand. But At this point, you know, certainly I hope everyone at home and driving in your car and however you're listening to this enjoyed it. And we'll talk to you again real soon.
Cheers.
Cheers.